Living my best life. Yeah, yeah.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Here's the other surprising part.
With guest host Brian Weber.
Yeah, big shoes to fill. Eisen's a legend.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles. The Rich Eisen Show.
Do you know who I am? I'm a guy on television. I have my own show.
And now, sitting in for Rich, here's Brian Weber.
Final hour of the program before we tip off the long holiday weekend, but I'll always carve out time for your interaction. 844-204-7424 is the phone number. You can X me on the X platform, BW Weber, Weber with two B's. Maybe I'll make that Weber with two X's. We have only had one guest so far in our 2 hours together. Enjoyed the basketball analysis provided by Kurt Hedlund, NBA writer for NBCSports.com. We did that in the last hour. Looking ahead, 40 minutes from now, we'll say hello to guest number two to wrap up the program with gusto. If I'm talking baseball, I'm focusing on the stars, Ohtani, Judge, and the rest. Looking forward to rounding the bases with Joe Sheehan. Longtime baseball writer, you've read his work for Sports Illustrated, other leading platforms. Now, be sure to check out his work on his own. Joe, like Rich, betting on himself. Go to joesheehan.com and subscribe to the Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter, because after all, as we go oldie Magoo, and you can go to my Twitter feed to find out how old I actually look, BW Weber, Weber with two B's. Memorial Day, not too long ago, was dominated by baseball and the Indy 500. Kids, it was a simpler time. We watched Brady Bunch reruns because it was the only thing on. Still, I understand. This is why I do baseball in very small and digestible sample sizes. It's no longer a national sport other than the postseason. It gets crushed by the NFL head-to-head. Somebody is still going to these games. $10 billion in revenue each year, and the pitch clock has been magnificent. Mentioned in passing, but I realize the audience always changed. I watched the game the other day. Dodgers, because I'm here in L.A. Who's going to watch the Angels, even if you lived across the street in Anaheim? Just over 2 hours. In some ways, if you go to the game, it might be too fast, because if you meander in, waste some time getting a hot dog, although with all the upscale technology now, they'll come to your seat if you're in the right tax bracket. Man, the whole world has changed. There are a lot of salient topics across MLB to get into, and that is coming up in just under 40 minutes. This is the football show of record, and I am here to make sure that there is no damage done to the brand that Rich has worked so hard to create. We'll get back to the NFL. We talked about Dak Prescott saying, I'm not a money guy. In fact, I've never cared about money at all in my career, as he's looking for a new contract extension. We'll use that as a pivot to expand our focus. Who else is on the cusp of breaking the bank? We'll get into Tua Tagovailoa, who stayed away from the majority of the voluntary offseason program in Miami, showed up this week to, quote-unquote, do the right thing. Is Mike McDaniel fully sold on Tua? Because remember, and we'll get into this in substance in 20 minutes with the NBA less than 2 minutes away, McDaniel is part of that Shanahan coaching tree going back to Washington. In fact, Mike Silver, I'll name drop here, another NFL Network alum, along with yours truly, and Rich, the face of that network from day one. Mike, now a columnist in the San Francisco Bay Area for the Chronicle, California alum. He knows that area very well, having grown up in Northern California. He's got a new book coming out detailing the Shanahan coaching tree from that staff in Washington. We know all those guys, Kyle Shanahan, Matt LaFleur, most especially Sean McVay, are very particular about their quarterback. So we'll talk about Tua's future in Miami coming up. But it's the most wonderful time of the year for NBA fans. So I'm going to try to hammer home more thoughts on what happened last night in Boston, as well as look forward. Let me reach over and hit the button here. The countdown to tip-off is underway. Game two between the Mavs and Timberwolves tonight. Dallas already with mission accomplished, ripping home court from Minnesota in game one. Although if you watch that game, and I hate to be more cliche than normal, certainly could have gone either way. Credit Dallas, especially for the defense they played and what they got from their big two, especially Kyrie in the first half, maybe motivated by Ant saying, quote-unquote, I want Kyrie. Dallas looking like the team with more playoff experience. I realize it's a revamped roster because of the moves that brought in Gafford and Washington prior to the deadline. But just watching that game, and as we discussed in the last hour with Kurt Heelan of NBCSports.com, Minnesota did look gassed to a degree, especially Anthony Edwards, because they don't have the same kind of playoff experience as Dallas. Sandwiched in between couple runs to the conference finals, not making the playoffs at all last year as Dallas went tank you very much last couple games to protect their draft standing. As for Boston, they're playing like a team that was clearly the best team in the regular season. 14 wins better than the Knicks. Perhaps a reflection overall in the disparity between the East and the West. But for all of my fascination on what Jason Tatum failed to do with only 4 points in the first half, candidly, Celtics did not need him because Jaylen Brown was absolutely locked in, finished with 40. And it's not just their big two. If you have tracked the Celtics through this outstanding playoff run that's had some mini dips. Remember, they dealt with the conundrum on a big word Friday, the challenge of game twos in the previous two series, blowing games almost inexplicably, both to undermanned Miami without Jimmy Butler, and then they blew the game to Cleveland, didn't burn them in any way. This one feels like, at worst, gentlemen sweep, perhaps even more 4-4-4 kind of stuff as we go old school Moses Malone if Tyrese Halliburton can't go. Went down in the third quarter, and at that point, and I thought Kurt Heelan had a good reaction to my question about the strategic choice made by Pacers head coach Rick Carlisle. Once it was clear Halliburton wasn't coming back, he effectively tapped out. He put a lot of guys on the floor that you never see play. Now, some of that seemed to be by design because Carlisle, thinking worst case, realizing that his main guys, and in this playoff run, it's been mainly Pascal Siakam, validating the aggressive move made by Indy before the deadline to pick him up from Toronto, not only because he's got a ring with a 2019 championship when Kawhi could actually show up and be available in the postseason. And think about this playoff overall takeaway. What's the one thing that stands out? If I asked you, okay, you've been watching these games, 40 games and 40 nights. What's the thing that stands out the most to you? To me, it's been who's not on the floor. This postseason has been absolutely abused by injuries. And if we're going to offer fair thoughts on Indiana, certainly the draw, to use the tennis term, went their way when Giannis couldn't play at all. Dame was dinged up early in that series, but continuing throughout all of the stars that were scratches, no Jimmy Butler, no Donovan Mitchell towards the end of Boston taking care of Cleveland. I mentioned Kawhi, and I'm not kicking Kawhi while he's down. If you went through the All-NBA teams, he showed up once more on that list because when he's healthy, he's a remarkable game-changing talent. The problem is, when he's healthy, .. And unfortunately, he's just not reliable in the postseason. Still, you play 82 games, and he played a lot of them. Wasn't about load management this year. Still, wasn't there when the Clippers needed them, losing to Dallas round one. Did I mention the Knicks? The entire team felt like they were in a body cast. And then, unfortunately, saw Halliburton go down last night, and it felt like down goes Indy as well. So, since we're going to have plenty of time to talk about Boston moving forward, just a quick tip of the cat. I'm Brian Weber, trying to get the words out. In for Rich Eisen. Still time for you to pick up the phone. 844-204-7424. And the conversation is always in full effect on the X platform, BW Weber, Weber with two Bs. Indy ahead of schedule. This was a team that decided to get younger and think about the deal for Halliburton for Sabonis, the rare trade that worked out for both teams, both All-Stars. Unfortunately for Tyrese, in my view, as someone who watches a lot of regular season NBA, he was never fully the same because of that hamstring injury. In fact, he was completely honest about, I'm coming back to make sure I can play the 65 games necessary with a new tweak to the rules to be eligible for an all-NBA selection. But to watch him go down again, it felt like the plug was being pulled from Indiana. Now, we've seen them rally repeatedly against the Knicks, and to get it done in Game 6 and 7 with no margin for error, and to come up with not only a Game 7 victory at MSG, but to do it in dominant fashion, I'll give Indiana a smidge of a chance. But it feels like it's a foregone conclusion for the most complete team in basketball to move on to the finals with loads of rest. NBA Finals cannot be moved up. This is a commitment the league makes in advance. They won't start until June 6th, meaning that if we get a cameo from Kristaps Porzingis, let's say in Game 4, just to get the basketball conditioning moving in the right direction again, he's going to have plenty of time to let his legs rest up from a little bit of trauma getting back on the floor. It's not just Brown and Tatum. Very quietly, in addition to his defense, and I hate to be the old school, we never talk about defense, but Jrue Holiday is one of the best on-the-ball defenders in the league. Well, he looked very good offensively in Game 1. And the supporting cast comprised of guys like Derek White. Boston, and I'm not doing the gambling show yet because I've not been paid to go into that line of work, but I'm ready. You can download my podcast, The Sportsbook with B-Web, wherever you get your podcast. Boston would be a considerable favorite. This is not breaking news, especially the way they played during the regular season. Remember, 37-4 at home this year, making the losses in Game 2 to Miami and Cleveland all the more galling. Boston's going to be a favorite irrespective of its Dallas or Minnesota. Now, who's it going to be coming out of the West? I'm riding with Dallas. And this comes to you from somebody who has had a lot of material derived from some lunatic views from Kyrie Irving. And we're in a good, upbeat frame of mind heading into a long holiday weekend, unofficial start of summer, so I don't need to go through everything that Kyrie has said, especially the highly objectionable thoughts. But Kyrie, for lack of a better term, could not get out of his own way verbally in the past. By all accounts, a very bright guy. If you hear him, and he showed up on the TNT set after the Game 1 victory in Minnesota, he can be outgoing, he can be charming. I don't know him on a personal level at all. I am just viewing from afar, but it's so interesting to have the major contrast from Kyrie, especially in Brooklyn, to Kyrie this year in Dallas. He's not said anything that wasn't basketball related, and maybe that's by design. Maybe he's looking for some reinvention. Whatever the motivation is, how can you be critical of what Dallas has done in a Western Conference in which, candidly, I didn't give them much thought. Now, understanding they had made the finals just a couple of years ago, but as we were going through, and I did this, I'm sure, in mind-numbing detail, because I was with you during Christmas week, and I'm not only going to talk NFL as much as now it's hijacked Santa's Day as well, but if we were just slotting teams in the West, well, not a hot take to go, how about we lean into the reigning champs from Denver, and I'm still baffled as to what happened in the third quarter when Denver could not close Minnesota out with a 20-point lead at home. And yes, Denver was missing role players from the championship run the year before. I'm not saying Bruce Brown where Jeff Green would have made a huge difference, but it was clearly a deeper team that won that title. But if we were just going through off the top of our heads the teams with the best chance of making it out of the deep and competitive Western Conference, it would have taken me a while to get to Dallas, understanding they had another 50-win season. And I'll be upfront with you, as I said with my baseball thoughts, I get distracted by stars. And maybe that's because I'm in the storytelling business, and it's much more straightforward to connect to an audience when we're talking about marquee names. It's not sexy to break down the impact that Daniel Gafford and P.J. Washington have had for Dallas, unless you were paying attention against the Thunder and saw Washington be a difference maker in a couple games there. But as I was thinking about how the West was going to come together, well, I'll give you another injury. I thought this was the year for Zion because he had gotten in much better shape and when healthy was playing outstanding ball. Down goes Zion in this year of injuries. In fact, we've already had more player games lost due to injury in this postseason at this stage. We're still in the conference finals, mind you, than last year's postseason in its entirety. Just a bad run of luck for the NBA, as much as so many of you think that everything is scripted. They don't give me the handbook. Maybe when you got to page 97, it said, okay, the honky-tonk man will have a run-in, and then there's going to be a bunch of injuries. Let's just call it misfortune. But if I was going through the teams that I gave a legitimate chance to emerging from the West this year, I would have gone Denver, Minnesota, OKC. I thought, as the fool that I am, that Kevin Durant at least would show up in the postseason. Didn't like the addition of Bradley Beal, but how can you dissect KD's resume prior to this year? So Dallas snuck up on me, but because I actually try to watch games, I know it's a novel concept. It is my job after all. A lot to like about this team. And I think if you want to play NBA conspiracy theorist, there's two ways of looking at how the league would like this to play out. Minnesota, it becomes the coronation of Anthony Edwards, right? He's the new face of the league at the age of 22. And we know LeBron's always going to be in control as long as he's going to play. And he's probably going to play two more years. He might hoodwink and pressure the Lakers into drafting his kid. I'm based here in Los Angeles. I'm Brian Weber, in for Rich Eisen. Jot down the phone number if you want to give me a call on Monday, 844-204-7424. Or you can X me, BW Weber, Weber with two B's. I went to grad school at USC. I watched Bronny James play a lot. And let's also provide the important context. He dealt with cardiac arrest. He needed a heart procedure. The fact that this young man is even playing college basketball is remarkable. That said, he made no impact on a lousy USC team. He doesn't look like an NBA prospect to me, but we know how it works. If my old man had been more successful, I probably would have chosen a different line of work, just to be thoroughly upfront with you. So I'm not endorsing Nepo moves. I'm just telling you like it is. And since LeBron, as much as the Lakers can claim that they make their decisions independent of LBJ, if LeBron makes it clear that he wants J.J. Redick to coach that team, not only because they're boys and co-host on the podcast, it's going to get done. And candidly, as a viewer, I would prefer JJ to move into coaching or just stick to his podcast. I don't enjoy him calling games because it doesn't seem like he's having fun. Now, he's staying in character. That's who he is. And I understand that decision from a network perspective because they had to get somebody when Doc said, hey, I really enjoyed working you these 12 games, this was great. Mike Breen, good to see you, Doris. I'm going to Milwaukee to run that franchise into the ground. But JJ's a tough listen. There's got to be some joy to what you're doing, especially in the playoffs. But just thinking about the West and how much time we devote to LeBron, watch, and what he's going to do with the hammer of free agency, Dallas is largely overlooked. So I think if you're the NBA, you'd enjoy Anthony Edwards, but at least Dallas has the championship pedigree of the past. This is a franchise that has won before. And Luka is one of the top five players in the world. I think you could sell Luka and Kyrie to casual fans more than here comes Ant and a bunch of guys that, unless you follow basketball, you don't know. Unless you want to blame COVID on Rudy Gobert the day before the world came to a halt. I'm Brian Weber, in for Rich Eisen. We'll talk more basketball, but we're going to shift gears in large measure coming up. I'm about to check out the Twitter feed, the X feed, so if you want to express opinion over there, it's BW Weber, Weber with two Bs. 20 minutes, we talk some baseball, because Memorial Day weekend belongs to baseball. Those of us stuck in the mid-80s. Joe Sheehan of the Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter will be our guest. Coming up, a few more NBA takeaways. And because this is the football show of record, I mention Dak Prescott and his contract situation. If Dak is not on the clock right now, if he's not going to get paid soon, who's the next marquee quarterback that could jump the line to break the bank next? And will Aaron Rodgers' hypocrisy ever come to an end? I'm Brian Weber, always a delight to keep the chair warm for Rich and the fellas. We continue right here on The Rich Eisen Show.
Afford Anything talks about how to avoid common pitfalls, how to refine your mental models, and how to think about how to think.
Paula, while certainly you can mess up on $1 million a year, it is far less likely than it is on $30,000 a year.
Right.
I would meet wonderful people that were struggling with a budget that was super tight. It was 100%. You need to make more money.
Make smarter choices and build a better life.
Afford Anything, wherever you listen.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Welcome back to the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network. I'm Brian Weber, and I'm proudly sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk, furnished by Grainger, with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. We have reached the business end of the program in 15 minutes. If I'm talking baseball, I'm doing it concisely, with the goal to entertain and inform, and I'll have some assistance from one of the most insightful baseball minds available. It's Joe Sheehan. You've read his work for Sports Illustrated, other leading baseball outlets over the years. Joe, hanging out his own shingle now. Be sure to support the brand, JoeSheehan.com. And think about subscribing to the Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter. And as I was told millions of years ago on radio, my man, play the hits. So we'll be talking Dodgers, Yankees. I will not be breaking down the NL Central in granular detail. And I try my best never to drift too far away from football. This is the football show of record after all, although I had to go NBA heavy. Now, I know other shows would have found a way to make it all football all the time, but as I mentioned, I love hoops as much as I love football. Still, I understand how the world works. And with OTAs going on around the league, running into mandatory mini camps, the primary benefit of that as football fans is we get dudes at podiums and we get some of the biggest names in sports talking about things that do not involve X's and O's. So in the first hour of the show, we devoted a good chunk of the first 60 minutes to Dak Prescott's contract situation, and a quote that I just can't read enough because I love the 12-dimensional chess that Dak is trying to play. Quote, "I don't play for money. Never have cared for it." You know, there are things I don't care for in life. I don't like getting a colonoscopy necessarily. That would be something if you just threw out there, hey, fill-in guy, what don't you care for? You know how long it would take me to get to money on my list of things I'd never care for? And I chose a career primarily out of passion. I'm a freaking dummy, okay? So if I was solely money motivated, I would have done a lot of other things in my life. Still, even I, as I try to justify a series of terrible career choices, would never trot out, you know, money, I never care for it. So how about guys who are interested in money? And we know Dak is just in the spin factory because he's miffed, deservedly so, that Dallas has mishandled his contract situation again after the franchise tag situation. Then the summer of Dak as a fill-in host, I had way too many shows talking about, is he going to get paid? If not, where's he going? So at this stage, wake me up when his name is attached to the dotted line. But we knew, and this is how it works in the NFL, they're slotting when it comes to quarterbacks. And when Jared Goff got paid, and good for Jared, I don't root for individual teams or players, but I like redemption stories. And Jared Goff was left for dead by the Rams. Now, I can understand Sean McVay's thought process because he felt like he had maxed out with Goff as his quarterback. It's not Goff's fault that the Rams overdrafted him. I watch a lot of West Coast football, spent a lot of time in the San Francisco Bay Area. Never once watching Goff play for Cal did I ever think, oh, that's a number one overall pick. So that's on the Rams and the old regime led by Mr. 7-9, Jeff Fisher. But when McVay had a chance to go after what he thought was an upgrade, they kicked Goff to the curb as quickly as possible, landed in Detroit, part of that resurgence. And isn't it great to see Detroit as a football town? I know Stevie Eiserman's not walking through that door, but think about the Lions' remarkable transformation and almost three-quarters of a million people watching Rich and the crew at NFL Network handle the NFL draft. Detroit is back, baby, in a major way. We got a new Axel Foley movie coming out in a few weeks. It's all about Motown. But once Goff got his well-deserved deal, the question became, who's getting paid next? So Dak is in his own category because this gets down to the dysfunction of the Cowboys, plus he's already gotten multiple deals. I think it's more interesting to look at players on the cusp of that second contract, which is the Powerball money in the NFL. The situation in Miami with Tua remains interesting and I think fluid to a degree. I think a deal will get done. And I'm not just trying to stir things up as a fill-in guy from a distance. I'm Brian Weber in for Rich Eisen, keeping you company on this Friday, heading into the long holiday weekend, and we'll do it again on Monday. We're live in this very chair again here on the Rich Eisen Show. But I do think it's fair to wonder, is Mike McDaniel all in on Tua? Remember, Tua is a byproduct of the previous regime. I just gave you the comp, Goff and Sean McVay, and a relationship that deteriorated. They got to a Super Bowl together. Miami, as much as I love watching them, you know how lousy they played against teams with winning records last year. And unfortunately, they ran into Kansas City, and no one's going to beat Kansas City, at least not frequently in the playoffs in this era. So I'm not saying that Mike McDaniel is out on Tua. I'm just wondering if the deal will be structured in a way that Miami has outs. Because remember, you're going to hear some insane number. But it really comes down to the guaranteed money and guaranteed years. You want as much as you can up front with a signing bonus because that's the generational wealth and you can monetize that for decades. But most of these contracts, especially with quarterbacks, become a series of one-year deals after, say, year three. So I think a couple things are in play here. What do the Dolphins do on the field this year? Nice marginal pickup of Odell Beckham Jr. and what feels like the twilight of his career just because he can't stay healthy. But you know it's all about Waddle and Tyreek stretching the field. But let's say Miami in a division now that has, pending Aaron Rodgers' availability, we'll talk about Rodgers coming up, a god-awful team in New England, still in the midst of this rebuild. And Buffalo, as much as they were baffling at times last year, well, when you have Josh Allen, you still have a chance. And we saw the Bills get back to the playoffs. And while their championship window may be closing, and don't lose sight of what they did defensively. They had a huge wave of talent go out the door because of salary cap reasons with veterans like Jordan Poyer, in fact, landing in Miami. It's Buffalo and Miami once more going back and forth in that division. Tua, let's say the contract negotiations continue into the season. Let's say Miami gets off to a 7-1 start. Maybe that gives him more leverage, but I think ultimately his relationship with Mike McDaniel, as it should, will come down to postseason success. Trevor Lawrence in line for a new deal. If you're the Jags, of course, you pay him probably sooner rather than later, because the more you wait, as Dallas is going to find out with Dak, the number only goes up. And if I was just going to do pop quiz hot shot, even though this is the football show of record, how many members of the Jaguars, like Star Wars, not Jaguars. How many Jags, other than Trevor Lawrence, can you even name? He is the face of the franchise by miles. He's going to get paid soon. Aaron Rodgers doesn't need, well, we all could use more money, except for Dak, doesn't need another deal, but he's got something to prove this year. Four snaps was all he played last year before, unfortunately, he snapped his Achilles. Aaron Rodgers, in my view, cannot get out of his own way. And I have a complicated relationship with a man who, for years, I said, as a fill-in host, he's the most skilled quarterback I had ever seen, and I'm older than my enthusiastic delivery would suggest. And I went to the same school as John Elway, who I think is on the short list of the best pure talented quarterback when you factor in arm strength, mobility, longevity, and the rest of those variables. Aaron lost me with his COVID stuff, and now he's lost me even further, praising Vladimir Putin. But when Aaron, at the media session he had earlier this week, back on the practice field, coming all the way back from the ripped Achilles, said, it's got to be all about football for the Jets. Same thing he said wrapping up last year's lost season, because when he went down, the entire year went down with him. When he said it's got to be all about football, in the very same press conference in which he acknowledged he gave serious thought to being a vice presidential candidate for Robert F. Kennedy Jr., is that the very definition of hypocrisy? How can you give me more double talk than saying it's got to be solely about football? Oh, by the way, I almost was part of a run for the White House, but the Jets have been so desperate for a quarterback since, oh, I don't know, Joe Willie Namath. This was the exercise I was used to use as a wise aleck kid in the 1980s. Give me the second best quarterback growing up in the suburbs of New York, second best quarterback in the history of the Jets. The answer then was Ken O'Brien. Prior to Aaron Rodgers' arrival, I think the right answer was Chad Pennington, unless you want to give Sanchez credit for being a part of those AFC Championship teams. So the Jets have turned over the franchise to Aaron. He can do whatever he wants. Once more, we're going to see a ton of the Jets in primetime because Mike North, the VP of scheduling, said, quote unquote, with Aaron going down last year and the Jets having all those terrible primetime games, the league felt like the Jets owed them one. So if you're already tired of Aaron, as a person, not a player, buckle up. A lot more gangrene and Aaron doing Aaron-like things coming up when we get to the season in the fall. Straight ahead, we're going to close the program, rounding the bases, talking baseball in entertaining fashion. Well, we're not even in June. You want to crown someone, Denny Green? Should we hand the Dodgers the World Series now? Looking forward to our latest baseball conversation with Joe Sheehan of the Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter. I'm Brian Weber, in for Rich. This is the Rich Eisen Show. I'm Brian Weber, in for Rich. Rich Eisen, getting you set for the long holiday weekend, and we'll do it again live on Monday. Looking forward to spending part of Memorial Day with you. Let's wrap up this program with gusto. Always a pleasure to talk baseball with one of the best in our industry. It is Joe Sheehan. Check out his fine work at joesheehan.com, and I would hope that you would consider subscribing to the Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter. Joe, we've not chatted since October. How are you?
Good, Brian. I always know when the summer's coming because that's when you call me.
Well, I was going to put you down for July 4th, but why don't we get through this conversation and you have my pledge. It'll be concise. And I think you know me well enough. I play the hits and I go with geography. So I'm here in Southern California and I watch the Dodgers on a daily basis. Joe, even a casual fan is aware of the transcendence of Shohei Ohtani, but has he taken things to a new level with his ability to compartmentalize? His interpreter, former interpreter, on his way to the big house, and Ohtani is still putting up sensational numbers.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to stop calling it like an Ohtani scandal, because Ohtani was just a victim of a crime here, like a player who got jobbed by his agent or something, or Jack Clark who went bankrupt in bad investments. But this was never an Ohtani gambling scandal. It was interpreter had a gambling problem and was stealing from him. And I think one of the things we're seeing is not just leave aside the off-field stuff, because I think he was always going to get through that. We're seeing what Ohtani can do if he doesn't have to pitch or concentrate on pitching or practice pitching every sixth day. He had some pretty large when pitching, not when pitching, let's pretend I did that in English, splits over the last few years with the Angels. Well, now all he has to do, and he's rehabbing the elbow, don't get me wrong, but now that he's only focusing on hitting, we're seeing him take that part of his game to another level. And that's really been entertaining. Now, I'm not saying, don't go back to the mound or anything like that, but we're getting this 1 year where all he has to do is be a hitter, and it's a ton of fun to watch.
Well, Joe, you beat me to it. It was I do try to map out my questions in advance so I have coherent thoughts. We know how much pitching means to Ohtani. It's part of his core identity going back to being a youngster in Japan. But given what you just laid out, is there any chance the Dodgers go to him in the offseason and say, we understand that you want to be a two-way player, but look at what you just did?
I mean, you can have that conversation, but Ohtani doesn't sign this contract. He doesn't make this commitment to the Dodgers without some assurances that he's going to get to return to the mound. With the Angels, Ohtani was a bit of an island to himself in a lot of ways. The Angels, in the first 3 years, he really wasn't a two-way player. He got hurt in his first season, 8 starts in. We had 2020 mixed in there. He came back. He wasn't pitching well. He had Tommy John surgery. It wasn't until his fourth year in the league that he elevated and became Shohei Ohtani. And full disclosure, Brian, I said a number of times during that period he should just give up, just be one or the other. And obviously I was wrong. This three-year stretch by Ohtani, we're going to talk about it forever. But I think he gets to go back to the mound next year with the idea now that if it does start to affect his play, if the pitching slips a little bit, if he can't stay healthy, now you start to have this conversation as he enters his 30s. But in 2025, he's going to get all the runway he needs to return as a pitcher.
Talking baseball with Joe Sheehan. Be sure to check out his outstanding work, joesheehan.com, and the Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter by subscription. It's a great value since we're talking about things on the mound. Those of us who follow college baseball knew all about Paul Skeens on his way to being the number one overall pick, and now casual fans are seeing just how sensational a talent he is. Third start yesterday, just one run allowed over 6 innings with the Giants. Now, Joe, we've seen phenoms flame out in the past, so I don't want to turn up the hype machine too much, but if Skeens can stay healthy, how good can he be in the long term?
I mean, a true number one starter. That's the upside. He was a Friday night starter at LSU and is in the majors less than a year after being drafted. That's your roadmap to being a number one starter. The modern pitching analysis looks at his fastball and says, it doesn't have that ride that we're looking for. But he's got this splinker now, this kind of split finger sinker pitch that's going to play off that fastball beautifully. They really held him back in the minors, but they've let him pitch. He's gone 6 a couple of times in the majors. It looks like they're topping him out around 100 pitches. So I don't even think the workload's going to be that big an issue, at least until they do shut him down eventually. But you're looking at a true number one. Brian, like any of these hard-throwing starters now, we're just going to be holding our breath to make sure that he's not shaking out his elbow, make sure we're not getting reports of the fabled forearm strain. It's really about health more than performance for Skeens.
Let's go from the good to the bad for now, which is a huge contrast because we know Houston's been a fixture in the postseason. credible stretch of reaching seven consecutive American League Championship Series and the two World Series wins, but I have the standings in front of me, and Houston still six games under 500. Why do you think they've been scuffling so much, and do you expect them to pull the nose up at some point?
They're starting to feel the effects of the depth that they don't have anymore. They had the 2 years where they were penalized with not having first and second round draft picks after the sign-stealing scandal. They've traded away a lot of their talent. They traded their top two prospects last year to the Mets to get Justin Verlander. The front office just isn't as good as it was under Jeff Lew now or even under James Click. So you've got a lot of slow degradation. And, you know, this has been a decade-long run. We would expect eventually this to fall a little bit. But the baseline talent, you look at Altuve, Tucker, Alvarez, I put Framber Valdez and even Justin Verlander at 40 in that mix. That kind of core means you're going to be in the race. So while they played poorly, they've had some bullpen collapses that have hurt them. I still see them as the best team of the three contenders in the AL West.
Finally, since you cover the full gamut, when people subscribe to the Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter, we know about the debacle of the new unis. I don't need you to weigh in on see-through pants. It's a family show. Where do you come out on the City Connect jerseys?
I think they've been a mixed bag. Some of them I really do enjoy. The Mariners one, excuse me, the Marlins one that the Cubans, the kind of tribute to the Cuban team. The old National ones with the cherry blossoms I thought were really good. I have two feelings, though. I feel like they are getting a little bit worse as we go along. They're just getting with running out of ideas or teams that aren't as connected to their cities. And the other thing is, I don't think every team needs one. I don't need the Tigers in a City Connect. That is a classic home uniform with the old English D. They should wear that all the time. Same thing for the Yankees. I would say the same thing for the Cardinals. There are just some teams whose uniforms are so iconic. They are the City Connects for those teams.
Joe, I know family comes first on the holiday weekend, so I greatly appreciate you taking the time. And as you foreshadowed, fill-in season's coming up, so I hope we can chat again late June, early July.
Sounds good, Brian. Enjoy the holiday.
You too. Joe Sheehan, one of the best in our business. I would recommend you check out the Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter. It's informative and insightful, and you get all the information by logging on to joesheehan.com. And I'm going to give myself, dare I say, a self-high five. I could use a little DDP yoga right now based on this chair that I'm lurched over in. I did an entire baseball segment without talking about the Yankees or the Mets. You know, here I am. Let's see. I moved to California in 1987. And like every other loudmouth New Yorker, I think that the world ends at the Hudson River. And that is, as I now try to convince you to watch more baseball, maybe because I did some college baseball this year, although I think my career is over because I'm the guy who left the game in progress. I'm not making light of it, but since the conference has gone to hell and the network's going out of business, I had a commitment on Easter Sunday, a sunrise family service I could not miss. I have done every stupid game on every holiday my entire adult life. I took a series on short notice. I had a 5-run lead in the 8th inning. I had a ground ball to second. If a sure-handed infielder for said team, I don't have to get into particulars, had made the routine 4-3, I make my plane with 45 minutes to spare. Well, that's baseball, Susan. Beat goes on, and I had a decision to make, and I'm proud of this ad lib. I'm not justifying, not staying for the game. I've never done this before. I'll probably never have an opportunity again. Although we all cut it close when it comes to travel. And the soon-to-be defunct network I work for had me working alone and not paying me anymore, just so you know what happened there. As we went to the bottom of the ninth, and I realized if I'm going to make this plane, last plane out of town, and I was not going to stiff my family for once, because yes, I am a family man, living alone in a one-bedroom apartment. I thought this was not a bad ad lib. I said my name, and I said, natural sound will take you the rest of the way, and it was amazing. It got picked up on one blog, and I can understand people who objected to my decision, which I fully explained on the X platform. It was amazing how many people then chimed in on X saying, this is the best broadcast I've ever heard because that guy never shuts the hell up. So the audience is not wrong. You all think, now hopefully not on talk show, but you all think when we do games, we talk too much. I get it. And I talk too much working alone doing games because you feel the need to show just how insightful you are. I went a long way for that story. I'm not even sure why I told it, but that is the beauty of live radio. And it's a testament to Rich's commitment to you as a customer that I'm here today. And I'm going to be back here on Monday with all the fallout from the NBA weekend. A lot of shows play tape. Rich has so many extraordinary interviews. He could just queue up John Hamm, Ric Flair, and not have a host come in. But because this is a byproduct of Rich Eisen Productions, he makes sure that the listener comes first. So however you view our time together, I've got three more hours with you that I'm really looking forward to on Monday. I think at that point we'll know the Celtics will have even more of a dagger through, unfortunately, the battered Pacers' chances. I think Minnesota wins tonight. I think that series is going 7 once more, but I'll give you all of our strong NBA takeaways coming up on Monday. Want to thank our guests. Appreciate the MLB opinions of Joe Sheehan. Check out the Joe Sheehan Baseball newsletter. I am aware, because I've spoken to him on the radio for over a decade now, Kurt Heelan is his name, and he writes for NBC Sports. Want to thank Rich once more. Always a delight to be in for the Hall of Fame caliber broadcaster, Bruce Gilbert, all the good people at Westwood One, our technical producer Curtis, doing a phenomenal job. Have a safe and wonderful holiday weekend. I'll talk to you on Monday here on The Rich Eisen Show.
Welcome to Talkville,
the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. Guest star Sarah Carter as Alicia Baker.
Although I didn't really work with her a lot. But Tom did, and they had some real big smoochy scenes.
Yeah. Should we talk about that?
Could there be any more sex? What was a 3-page makeout scene that just kept going? Good Lord. We get it. They have chemistry.
Jump in now or catch up on any of the past seasons of Talkville on YouTube or wherever you listen.